What are key challenges in decentralized employment in Web3 and compensation in tokens? What are common misconceptions about employment in Web3? Are contributors to a DAO legally considered employees? We'll cover all this and more in this conversation with Ken Ophiel, co-founder and CEO of WorkDAO.
Welcome to Web3 Opportunities Podcast, hosted by Kelvin Wong, creator of JP Morgan's Strategic Solutions Group. If you come from a non-technical background and want to learn how blockchain technologies disrupt industries and want to discover investment and career opportunities in the crypto economy, you've come to the right place. In each episode, Kelvin chats with some of the most innovative founders, investors, and thought leaders in blockchain and crypto space. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and nothing said on the podcast should be taken as financial advice. Now let's dive in.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kelvin Wong. My guest today is Ken Ophiel, co-founder and CEO of WorkDAO. Ken, thank you for being here and welcome.
Thanks for having me today.
Ken, please tell us a bit about your background and your journey into crypto.
Yeah, so I am half Japanese, half American, and I was born in Tokyo. I moved to the US when I was 10. And I wanted to get back in touch with my roots. So I moved back to Tokyo in 2015. And in crypto years, it's like a lifetime ago. But back then, Japan used to be the center of crypto. I think at that point, it was starting to shift away. You know, like the most of the trading volumes were going through Japanese exchanges. And that's where I first got my feet wet and learned about Bitcoin. And, you know, from there, I was just fascinated by the blockchain and Bitcoin. And I always then wanted to build a foundational company in the space, but I didn't really, you know, have the right idea at the time. And so for the time being, I thought what's better is why don't I try to go learn about other companies. And in Tokyo, I found it. I found my path to that to be as a trader at Merrill Lynch in Tokyo. And, you know, through that, I saw that building the infrastructure for any new industry is always a critical function, and really admired companies that were organizing, you know, technology and capital like Alchemy. And then, you know, for capital, there's a bunch of DeFi companies. And then wanted to then tackle some of the, arguably one of the hardest problems in the space, which is organizing labor.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting journey. What were you trading at Merrill Lynch in Tokyo?
It was mainly equities. Cash equities. I did a little bit of some of the other, you know, futures and options, but it was mainly Japanese stocks, and then a little bit of the rest of the region.
Awesome. I was trading mainly interest rate derivatives in the early 90s in Tokyo. I lived there for a couple of years. It's such an interesting experience.
I'm sure. And that can be a podcast episode on its own. So down the line.
So Ken, what are you most excited about with respect to Web3 now?
Yeah, so I think taking a step back, looking at Web2, what made Web2 so exciting was this idea of network effects. I think if you look at every huge Web2 company, you know, the Googles, the Amazons, the Facebooks, they all depended on network effects to become a huge company. You know, you go on these websites or applications because your friends and colleagues are there, and you go where everyone else is, and that just, you know, brings more people in. Like Amazon, for example, you know, you go there because as a seller, there's already buyers there. And so more sellers come and more buyers come. You know, you see this again and again and again in Web2. with Web3, I think what's really exciting here is you get to put the value in the hands of its stakeholders. Mm-hmm. You can align all the stakeholders, you know, your customers, your vendors, your partners, and then, you know, you can create much more stability in the long run. It's much more long-term focused, you know, and this is done by tokenomics. And I think the blockchain, where the blockchain removes network effects. And the way it does it is that, you know, your business that has competitors, you know, you can see every transaction, you can see exactly how the business is run. And you know, that opens the question is like, what happens then? Like, how do you build businesses that align all the stakeholders? Mm-hmm. I think like right now we're in for this volatile times because, you know, we're still figuring it out. It's still the early innings, but I think, again, looking at the long run, there's this opportunity, that's, I think, going to disrupt a lot of these, you know, network effects. And, you know, all these existing businesses are going to have to figure out new ways to succeed. You know, I think that there's going to be a lot of learnings over the next decade, and it's going to take some time, but, it's going to be really, really, exciting and interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Web3 is a global movement made up of individual contributors from all over the world. What are key challenges for employment in Web3 for both employers and employees?
Sure. So with the employment for Web3, I think that what gets interesting is there's this new vehicle for you know, compensation that now exists, you know, in the form of a token, and people are less excited about equity now. And, you know, people want to be compensated in tokens as part of their upside. And so I think with this global movement, as you say, there's already like incredibly complex problems that companies have to face when you want to hire someone in a different jurisdiction. And then it gets like exponentially more difficult when you want to hire someone in a different jurisdiction, and then, you know, you want to pay them in this thing called a token. That's where there's massive challenges where people are still trying to figure out how do you actually do this. I would say that there's just open secret in the industry right now where everyone is just doing it illegally and not paying their taxes. It's just, well, let's just send you the token and, you know, you figure it out yourself. You know, it's kind of it's kind of funny looking at, you know, all these organizations that are bending over backward to follow you know, SEC regulations, but then are just blatantly breaking all these employment and tax laws all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Now, your earlier point about employees generally favor tokens over equity, is it because of the secondary liquidity that tokens potentially offer?
I don't, you know, it's something that where I'm not sure what the exact reason is. And I even compare it, you know, to even between cash and equity. I think equity is kind of a way to get compensated is still only really understood in very, very, you know, small niches in the world. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, if you go to Silicon Valley and you try to, you know, go hire someone, people are always going to ask about, well, how much equity do I get as part of this offer? But if you go to like 99% of the world, you go to, you know, somewhere in Japan, for example, or somewhere in, you know, Europe, I think that most people will still prefer having cash. You know, the idea of equity as something that can rise in value is still like only understood within certain pockets of communities. But when it comes to a token, I don't, you know, this is something that I'm sure there's going to be some studies perhaps on why it resonates so much more. I think tokens as something that is a vehicle for wealth creation, I think, is much more widely understood across all, you know, peoples. And I think that's part of why, you know, crypto has had such widespread adoption or one of the reasons why. And in terms of when people want to go join a Web3 company or DAO, The idea of getting paid in the token, again, it's not just about the upside, but you get to be a stakeholder in the community because tokens have these different properties or additional different properties than equity, where you get to vote, you get to, you know, have additional features that, you know, again, align you as a stakeholder much more so than equity.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are common misconceptions about employment in Web3?
I think the it's an interesting question because I think that like it's the same as employment in, you know, Web 1 or Web 2 or any other employment. Employment laws are some of the oldest and most defined laws that exist in you know, every jurisdiction, and so it should be the same. Except I think right now there's, again, it's a new industry. People are still figuring out how do you work for some of these organizations that are global, that are distributed, that, you know, might not even have a legal entity. And so it's quite chaotic. But in terms of the way that we view employment Web3, it shouldn't, you know, be that way.
Mm-hmm. Now let's get to the basics. What is a decentralized autonomous organization, DAO for short?
Sure. DAOs are an organization, you know, that's represented by rules encoded as, you know, transparent smart contracts controlled by the organization's members and not influenced by a centralized party. So the idea is that as rules are embedded into the code, there's no managers that are needed, and it removes, you know, this middle management or any sort of bureaucracy or hierarchy hurdles. But you know, that's like going back to what the original DAO was contemplated as. But DAOs, you know, recently have evolved as a tool for organizing communities with a lot more human interaction and authority than I think initially contemplated. And so, you know, for example, there are organizations that utilize this decentralized voting to coordinate pools of capital. And then people are able to use that, use these new incentive structures for this. And I think right now, a top priority for a lot of these DAOs is to figure out how to engage their community and then direct and inspire their work on the creation of new intellectual property and then compensate them for their work. And they're meant to operate with far less top-down ownership, incentivizing community members to drive outcomes, and then, you know, be able to promote this different type of structure than traditional, call it C-corps or companies. And so these make them appealing for, you know, ecosystem-driven products and systems, such as decentralized finance platforms, community-led investment funds, creative mediums. And there's, you know, I think tons of opportunities that, you know, haven't really come to fruition yet. And I would say that Bitcoin is considered or generally considered to be the first fully functioning DAO. You know, mm-hmm. It has programmed rules. It functions autonomously and is basically coordinated through a consensus protocol.
Are contributors to a DAO legally considered employees?
So this is a question I think that we get a lot more these days. And going back to that, our earlier comment, labor laws are some of the most defined and well understood laws in the world. You know, they've been around for centuries. Mm-hmm. You know, sure, like some aspects of them are outdated, but you know, we think that 95 to 99% of them are good. Like that's our belief. So in terms of when someone is working for a DAO, like we'll take the US, for example, there's very clear ways that we can evaluate whether or not someone is considered, you know, an employee for a DAO. You can actually go to the IRS and they have a very straightforward way of looking at worker classifications. Like, are you an employee? Are you a contractor? Like, what's your actual relationship to the DAO? And, you know, there's basically like three categories that the IRS will use. It's like behavioral, financial, and kind of the type of relationship that you have with that organization. Mm-hmm. And it's really around kind of control of that organization. And so, you know, it's usually pretty clear in many cases where people fall into this. And so, you know, even if like contributors don't agree with this, or maybe the DAO doesn't agree with this. It's actually a very, the legal definition is quite clear. And it depends on, you know, that actual relationship. And so right now, because we're in the early stages of this industry, you know, things is kind of, operate fast and loose, and people aren't really taking as much consideration into what those worker relationships are. You know, the biggest concern would be making sure understanding what those relationships are, and especially when people are being compensated by this DAO, it can really create some serious issues, you know, around taxes and just general liabilities. Mm-hmm. And even more of a risk to these contributors is if these DAOs, in a lot of cases, don't actually have a legal entity around them, they can then be actually considered a part of a general partnership of the DAO, and then that would then essentially make them liable, you know, for all the, you know, actions of the DAO, which you really don't want to be in that position.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, in terms of legal structures, what's the impact of the DAO legal structure on compliant employment?
So there's a lot of recent work that's been pioneered around new legal frameworks, allowing DAOs to essentially be kind of quote unquote wrapped in these limited liability legal entities to better transact and interact with, you know, just basically the real world. You know, DAOs in many cases, if they don't have a legal entity, you know, you can't actually, you know, own anything. You can't sign legal contracts. And so as DAO principles develop and there's been some great work done and some of the legal structures that are contemplated are still using some of the pre-existing structures like unincorporated nonprofit associations. But even when you have these new sort of structures in place, you still are running into the same issues as any organization actually that has a legal entity around employing someone. It's still difficult. Like even in the US, there's different labor laws depending on what state you're hiring someone in. And so even if you have a legal structure, you still run into the same problem of, well, how the heck do you, you know, follow the labor laws in the jurisdiction that this person is based in, and how do you compensate them legally? And so, you know, whatever legal structure you have, you still run into this issue of like being able to have to follow labor laws and be able to compensate people. And again, it's incredibly difficult when you have to do it with tokens.
Yeah, that makes sense. Ken, tell us a bit about WorkDAO. What problems is WorkDAO solving?
So at WorkDAO, we really look at what we do as solving for these employment and compensation issues that all Web3 organizations face. So you can be a traditional C Corp, you can be a DAO with an entity, you can be a DAO without an entity. You're still going to struggle to figure out how to hire people and compensate them in any jurisdiction that these people may be based in. And we see that as a huge hurdle that any Web3 company is facing. We want to bridge the gap between the two so that, you know, none of these organizations, you know, have to face these problems themselves. And, you know, our belief again is that, you know, the current body of government laws are good. You know, governments aren't really speaking the language of Web3 companies and vice versa. And so we see ourselves as a necessary kind of intermediary where we're intimately familiar with the labor, tax, and, general securities laws in each country. And we're Web3 native. And so if you want to figure out, you know, how do you make sure you're in compliance with money transfer laws, we can do that. If you're a DeFi organization and you need to figure out how you can pay your people in your native token, we can do that. And we want to also talk to governments and help them foster Web3, because in the long term, we believe that Web3 is here to stay. We want to have a massive impact on the industry.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Now, what inspired your idea of starting WorkDAO, Ken?
I always wanted to build a foundational company that solves a real problem. And I think that for the next million, 10 million, 100 million people to really enter the Web3 ecosystem, there needs to be that bridge between the existing infrastructure of the world that isn't going to change anytime soon, like labor laws and tax laws, and then be able to, you know, bridge that with the bleeding cutting edge of what crypto is doing. And so it turns out that if you can reduce complexity and friction and lower barriers to entry, there's actually tons of people that want to dive into Web3. It's an exciting paradigm shift, but, you know, when you tell people, hey, like, we're not really sure how we're going to employ you, and we can't really give you benefits. We can't give you a W-2. And, you know, depending on, you know, if it's a DAO, like, you might be on the hook for some crazy liabilities that you don't really know about yet for receiving compensation in crypto, then these people aren't as eager to join. So people want stability, and to get the masses to join into the ecosystem, you know, that's the service that we're basically here to provide.
That makes so much sense. What trends do you see shaping Web3 employment in the next, say, 1 to 2 years?
I think that, fortunately or unfortunately, the biggest impact is going to be from how regulations unfold. A lot of that, I think, is going to be driven by the US. But outside of that, I think what's really exciting, again, is tokenomics and how that's going to change how businesses are conducted. And that goes back to my earlier point about, you know, network effects and, you know, having tokens to basically align stakeholders and be able to create this incentive alignment is really going to be, I think, interesting. And part of, I think, what's hard to fathom now is there are certain businesses that can't be built until there's this widespread adoption of a certain technology. I think going back to Web2, it's like these businesses literally couldn't have existed until there was this widespread adoption of the internet. So what gets me really excited is seeing this wider, you know, adoption of tokenomics into real business models that then can be built, then new businesses can be built on top of that. But I think, again, this is not necessarily a 1 to 2 years story, but it's going to be a bit longer term.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely an exciting trend. Ken, before we wrap up, what's a key message or takeaway you would like to leave with listeners?
Employment and compensation in Web3 is hard. And especially when teams are global dealing with tokens, there's fluid and fast changing regulations. It's very difficult, but that shouldn't be, you know, a barrier to people starting or joining the industry. And so if there is any doubts, like, there are organizations like us that are here to help. And I think that, you know, a lot of smart people are joining the industry, and we want to encourage as many people to, you know, be curious and start maybe contributing a bit to a DAO.
How can listeners learn more about WorkDAO?
You can find us on Twitter at the WorkDAO, and we've recently published our white paper on our website that you can read for a deeper dive at theworkdao.com.
Ken, this has been a highly informative conversation. Thank you for sharing your insights with us today.
Thanks, Kelvin.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. For those of you who have not left a review yet, please go leave a review on Apple iTunes. I'll be so grateful for that. Tell me what topics you would like to hear and who you would like me to bring on to the show. So head over there, do that now. And I'll see you on the next episode.